A few years back, History of the Saints began production of 7 seasons of a documentary television series titled History of the Saints. Season 1, Foundations of the Restoration. Season 2, Joseph Smith's Kirtland. Season 3, From Pentecost to Persecution, The Missouri Years. And Season 4, Joseph Smith's Nauvoo. Then 3 more seasons telling the story of Brigham Young and the Saints, beginning with the Nauvoo Exodus in 1846, titled Gathering to the West. Then Building Zion. And finally, The Kingdom Endures. Altogether, over 100 hours of Latter-day Saint pioneer history. For these and all of History of the Saints books and DVD products, visit us at historyofthesaints.org.
Welcome to the History of the Saints podcast. My name is Glenn Rawson, series host. What you are about to listen to is an episode about the documentary history of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. This episode is one of more than 250 presentations from 1805 and the birth of Joseph Smith the prophet through 1877 and the death of Brigham Young. This series interviews some of the finest scholars of our time and presents the latest in historical research and facts as it relates to early Latter-day Saint history. And it comes from the long-running, highly acclaimed television documentary series, History of the Saints. If you have a desire to learn the history in depth and detail, then this podcast is for you. Thank you for joining us.
We can talk all we want to about Joseph Smith and seer stones and hats and other 19th century historical matters. But when all is said and done, we can't prove anything about the Book of Mormon through historical evidence. Joseph Smith and ultimately the Lord has informed the readers of the Book of Mormon that the way in which to understand, truly understand the Book of Mormon is to read it as a spiritual book, as a scripture. And I think that's the lesson of history, is that history can only get you so far.
It was August of 1829 when the prophet's brother, Hiram Smith, brought the first 24 pages of the printer's manuscript to Egbert Bratt Grandin in his printing establishment in Palmyra, and the printing of the Book of Mormon began. It would not be completed for about another 7 months. But before the Book of Mormon could be printed, it had to be punctuated and paragraphed.
Joseph Smith did not dictate punctuation. He did not dictate paragraph breaks. The clerk was going as quickly as they could. What we have then in the original manuscript of the Book of Mormon is essentially one giant sentence from beginning to end. There's occasional punctuation, but for the most part, when Oliver Cowdery sat down to make a copy of the original manuscript into the printer's manuscript, he did not add any punctuation. There was no punctuation.
As quick as Mr. Grant had got his type and got all the things ready to work, Hiram Smith brought to the office 24 pages of manuscript on foolscap paper, closely written and legible, but not a punctuation mark from the beginning to the end. This was about the middle of August, 1829. John Gilbert.
We often take for granted what kind of work that takes, but to have a rough draft, essentially, with no punctuation, and turning that into the written word, the printed word, with the commas, the semicolons, the periods, and frankly, the Book of Mormon is a heavily punctuated book. This was a lot of effort on John Gilbert's part. And Gilbert, who was familiar with the printing operation, he had edited a newspaper, he had done some other things. He was educated for the time. He knew how to punctuate, but printing, spelling, punctuation, this was not an exact science as it is today. And so the punctuation we have in today's Book of Mormon is largely in thanks to John Gilbert, which we don't often think about.
John Gilbert also served as the typesetter for the Book of Mormon.
Now, typesetter is one of those words that have changed over the years. Back in 1830, a typesetter set type. One letter for every letter that they wanted to publish. It was a mind-boggling task, if we think about it. The cases for the typesetter were placed in front of them with the copy of what they wanted published. The typesetter had to take one letter at a time and put it on a composing stick. One letter at a time, one line at a time, one page at a time. It was back-breaking work, standing there day after day after day.
One of the things the printer was concerned about when he got to the Isaiah portions was that the punctuation and the capitalization is really tough. And he wanted to make it agree with the King James punctuation and so forth. So he finally convinced them to let him take the printer's manuscript home. And we can tell for two nights he did this for Isaiah portions, and he marked it up. Normally he would mark up things in the print shop with pencil, but here, when he took it home, he used heavy ink. It's just all over the place. It's quite... But he was worried about the Isaiah, because Isaiah is very difficult to do, and he didn't want to do it just off the top of his head.
In October of 1829, Joseph Smith went home to Harmony, leaving the printing of the Book of Mormon in the hands of Oliver Cowdery, Martin Harris, and his brother Hiram. Shortly thereafter, he wrote back to Oliver in Palmyra.
There begins to be a great call for our books in this country. The minds of the people are very much excited when they find that there is a copyright obtained and that there is really books about to be printed. Joseph Smith.
January the 2nd, 1830. A weekly periodical there in Palmyra called the Palmyra Reflector, published by one Obadiah Dogberry, began printing pirated extracts of the Book of Mormon. That did not go over well.
Abner Cole was publishing a newspaper in Palmyra. This was not a reputable newspaper, at least not many people saw it that way. It was a newspaper largely interested in writing against organized religion and other backwater things, as Cole felt was the case. Anyway, the Book of Mormon served as a perfect target for Abner Cole. Abner Cole did not have a press of his own, so he had an arrangement with Grandin to use Grandin's press nights and weekends when Grandin's press was not in operation, and that's where he was able to publish his newspaper. And Abner Cole, while he was setting type, must have looked around and saw all these sheets of the Book of Mormon, and he started printing. He started printing the Book of Mormon.
And apparently, Oliver Cowdery and Hiram Smith are completely unaware that this is going on, because it's going on when they're not there. Apparently, Grandin hasn't told them about it, although you'd think it would be some information he'd like to share. And so Lucy tells this story about this.
One Sunday afternoon, Hiram became very uneasy. He told Oliver that his peculiar feelings led him to believe that something was wrong at the printing office. Oliver asked if he thought there would be any harm in going to the office, notwithstanding it was Sunday. They debated some time. At last, Hiram said, "I shall not stop to consider the matter any longer, for I am going. You may suit yourself about the matter, but I will not suffer such uneasiness any longer without knowing the cause." In a few minutes, they were on their way to the printing establishment. When they arrived there, they found a man by the name of Abner Cole, very busy at work, printing a paper which seemed to be a weekly periodical of some description. Lucy Mack Smith.
They have an argument with him. Abner Cole, by all accounts, is not a very reasonable man in many respects. I mean, he's very aggressive with them, and as they start to say, "Hey, this is ours, you can't publish this," he says, "I'm going to do whatever I want." After quite an argument, they leave, unable to stop him. And so Lucy says that they send Joseph Smith Sr. immediately down to Harmony to go get Joseph and tell him, this guy's publishing the Book of Mormon already. Joseph, according to Lucy, comes back up as soon as he can, and in fact, comes back in the middle of this horrendous blizzard. It had actually been a very mild winter the whole first part of the year, and newspaper articles talking about how, oh, it's pleasant, there's not even any ice in the rivers, this is great. But the weekend that Joseph comes back up, it's horrendously cold, driving snowstorm, and they have to fight through this storm all day because Joseph's so desperate to get there to try and stop this purloining of the Book of Mormon text. She says when they got there, they were so frozen that Joseph had to just sit by the fire to warm before he could even really move. But as soon as he had recovered himself, he went immediately down to the print shop. And when he got there, he found the same thing that Hiram and Oliver had found the week before, and that was, here's Abner Cole printing portions of the Book of Mormon. And a verbal confrontation ensues.
Mr. Cole threw off his coat and, rolling up his sleeves, came towards my son in a great rage, roaring out at the top of his voice, "Do you want to fight, sir? Do you want to fight? I will publish just what I'm in mind to. And now if you want to fight, just come on." "Well now, Mr. Cole, you had better keep on your coat, for it's cold, and I am not going to fight nor anything of that sort. But you have got to stop printing my books, sir. I assure you, for I know my rights and shall maintain them." Mr. Cole began to cool off a little and finally concluded to submit to an arbitration and stop his proceedings without making further trouble. Lucy Mack Smith.
The incident with Cole sparked a concern. The Book of Mormon was copyright protected in the United States. But what about elsewhere? Canada, for instance.
Well, there was concern about the copyright beyond the United States. And Canada, of course, is right across the lake, right across the border, if you will, from New York. And so as part of the concern about what do we do about an international copyright or a copyright in the United Kingdom or for Canada, we need to explore that possibility. And we would have to have somebody in Canada. I'm not a Canadian. I'd have to have somebody in Canada that would arrange for the copyright.
So they take the printers, Oliver Cowdery and Hiram Page and two other brethren. We don't know who they were. They went in February of 1830, right in the middle of the winter. They said they walked across part of the lake because it was frozen. They tried for that month to get a printer, and they didn't succeed. They came back with the printer's manuscript.
While the venture in Canada ultimately failed, it had another result. 1/6 of the Book of Mormon, or from Helaman 13 to the end of Mormon, was printed using the original manuscript as the source text.
This is actually really important. If they wanted a really good 1830 edition textually, they should have taken the original in every time and leave the printers at home, because every time you copy a page, you make about 3 mistakes. Minor mistakes, but you make them. The typesetter makes about 3 mistakes per manuscript page. So you end up with 6. For that portion of the Book of Mormon from Helaman 13 to the end of Mormon, we have about a half as many errors in the transmission. Now, they're not huge errors, but they're words like or the or an ending or something like that, just little errors. But the text is better because they use the original.
A few years back, History of the Saints began production of 7 seasons of a documentary television series titled History of the Saints. Season 1, Foundations of the Restoration. Season 2, Joseph Smith's Kirtland. Season 3, From Pentecost to Persecution, The Missouri Years. And Season 4, Joseph Smith's Nauvoo. Then 3 more seasons telling the story of Brigham Young and the Saints, beginning with the Nauvoo Exodus in 1846, titled Gathering to the West. Then Building Zion. And finally, The Kingdom Endures. Altogether, over 100 hours of Latter-day Saint pioneer history. For these and all of History of the Saints books and DVD products, visit us at historyofthesaints.org.
when they printed the Book of Mormon, they had to do it one signature at a time, one gathering at a time. This was old-time printing, so they printed one large sheet. They could fold that up and make it into a signature, and then they had to disassemble all the type and then reassemble it for the next gathering. It was a time-intensive process.
Now, when they're starting the printing on one side, 16 pages, as they start the press work, they first of all would do a few copies, and they won't run the press yet, and they'll be doing a proof check. They'll be going through, and the typesetter say, oh, these are punctuation errors still. Oh, here's a spelling error. I got to correct. So he'll get that taken care of. And then they'll start the press run. And about 10 to 15% of the way through, while they're pulling the press, pulling off sheets, he will be checking more carefully those sheets. And then when he gets done with those 16 pages, they'll say, okay, stop the press. We're going to go in and make a few corrections. These are called impress changes. Then they make the changes and they go on. And so they print all the rest of them. So some of the sheets on one side are going to be uncorrected state and some will be corrected. Then if you're putting together 37 of these and some of them are uncorrected, about 15% of any given sheet is uncorrected and about 85% of them are correct, and you start mixing them, you're going to end up out of 37, usually from about 3 to 7 of the sheets will be uncorrected states on one half, on one side of them. And so because of just the pulling and the randomness, I've examined quite closely over 100 and never found two that have precisely the same 37 incorrect and or correct states. So the Book of Mormon shows, I think, in the beginning what Joseph Smith got, the hand of God. And then its transmission shows man trying to transmit it to the best of their ability. And we have to say that it's never really gotten in the way. You know, we've never had somebody trying to really sabotage the text or do really bad things to it. It's always been faithfully transmitted to the best of people's abilities.
While the Book of Mormon was being printed, opposition did not rest. Oliver overheard there at Grandin's print shop a plot to snatch the Book of Mormon from Mother Smith. He went home and warned her. A group of citizens later did come and asked Mother Smith if they could see the manuscript. She refused to produce it. Frustrated in their original plan, they threatened her to stop speaking of it, whereupon she said this.
Deacon Beckwith, if you should stick my flesh full of faggots and even burn me at the stake, I would declare, as long as God should give me breath, that Joseph has got the record and that I know it to be true. Lucy Mack Smith.
The local citizens, having no success with Mother Smith, then approached Hiram and Samuel, the prophet's brothers. And according to Mother Smith, Samuel responded thus, quoting Isaiah, "All ye beasts of the field, come to devour, yea, all ye beasts in the forest. His watchmen are blind, they are all ignorant. They are all dumb dogs, they cannot bark, sleeping, lying down, loving to slumber. Yea, they are greedy dogs which can never have enough, and they are shepherds that cannot understand. They all look to their own way, everyone for his own gain." Understandingly, Deacon Beckwith and friends left without any success. Mother Smith and her children were subsequently cut off from the local Presbyterian congregation.
People got excited for the Book of Mormon. We have one story of Thomas Marsh coming and investigating the rumors that he heard. And he became convinced. He was an early apostle of the church, but he became convinced of the Book of Mormon, so he wanted to go preach the gospel. And he felt that the Book of Mormon was an important component to that. but it wasn't published yet. So he took the first gathering, that first printed sheet, and took that. That'd be like having a missionary today take half the Book of Mormon to go preach. There's just this enthusiasm that we feel in the missionaries that they're not waiting for the final publication. They take what they can and go spread the news. And news it was. Angels, ancient plates, and this small collection of pages that is the result of that. There was great excitement.
Solomon Chamberlain was another one who came curious and came away converted.
As soon as they had printed 64 pages, I took them with their leave and pursued my journey to Canada. And I preached all that I knew concerning Mormonism to all, both high and low, rich and poor. And thus you see that this was the first that ever printed Mormonism was preached to this generation. I exhorted all people to prepare for the great work of God that was now about to come forth. Solomon Chamberlain.
The opposition still did not rest. A group of citizens determined that they would boycott the Book of Mormon, and that caught on. They went to Grandin and told him of the boycott. Grandin was afraid that he wouldn't be paid, so he stopped printing on the Book of Mormon right there. Well, they couldn't get him to start, so someone had to go to Pennsylvania once again and fetch Joseph.
When Joseph came, he and Martin Harris went to Grandin again and succeeded in making satisfactory arrangements with him, and the work went on as before and did not meet with any other impediment until the book was finished. Lucy Mack Smith.
This whole event resulted in an interesting agreement between Joseph Smith and Martin Harris.
We have the financial agreement with Martin Harris, January 16, 1830. It was signed by Joseph Smith. I hereby agree that Martin Harris shall have an equal privilege with me and my friends of selling the Book of Mormon of the edition now printing by Egbert B. Grandin until enough of them shall be sold to pay for the printing of the same, or until such times as the said Grandin shall be paid for the printing of the aforesaid books or copies. Signed January 16, 1830, Manchester, New York, witness Oliver Cowdery.
Finally, March 26, 1830, the first copies of the Book of Mormon went on sale in Grandin's print shop there in Palmyra. As mentioned before, it would be some time before all 5,000 copies were available.
Apparently it took from 1.5 to 2 years to bind all the sheets that they had for the 1830 edition. So what they did at the end of March, as they were printing the last signature, the 37th, they could start binding. That they'd probably already started working on getting copies, so that within a week or so, they could have 20 to 50 copies, some of them for sale.
Now, throughout early 1830, in the printing of the Book of Mormon, there was increasing talk about organizing a new church. When we come back, that is our story. The Organization of the Church of Christ, Tuesday, April 6th, 1830. I'm Glenn Rawson, and we'll see you then.
Thank you for listening. If you would like more information on what you have listened to, please go to historyofthesaints.org. The History of the Saints team that produced this podcast has also produced numerous books and full-length documentaries on early Latter-day Saint church history and the key figures that made that history. Thank you for joining us, and we'll see you next time.
This podcast of History of the Saints has been produced by Dennis Lyman and Glenn Rawson. History of the Saints is a 501c3 nonprofit organization.